Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning. You might be wondering, if we're talking about the downfall of Doriath today, as you can see by the title of this episode, then what are we doing down here with the dwarves in the mines again? Well, this story starts off with Thingol, King Thingol of Doriath, having recently reacquired the Naglamir from Húrin. This story picks up right as the events of the last episode, I guess, finish off, I guess you could say. This is the same chapter in the Silmarillion, chapter 22. And it's interesting how this story of Húrin goes right into the whole second half of this chapter, which is focused on Thingol and Doriath. It's like Húrin brings us on this journey across these locations that we've been to, and then now back to Doriath, and then we're back to, well, let's continue the story about Doriath and Thingol. It's an interesting way that Christopher Tolkien kind of weaved these stories together in this chapter. And the story of Doriath here is important. It kind of comes out of left field. It's like Christopher was saying, hey, remember that story about Beren and Lúthien? Remember the whole thing about the Silmaril? Remember Thingol's greed? And I guess you could call it... No, I think you have to call it greed. Because as we know, Thingol was never in Valinor. Thingol is not one of the Noldor. Thingol's desire to possess a Silmaril comes simply from the beauty of the object and the pride, I guess, of being the person who owns it. As we've seen many times in these stories, whether it's the Ring of Power or the Silmarils, very powerful, beautiful items make people do crazy things. let's just say that plainly. They are clearly stand-ins for real-world power and real-world fame, these kinds of things that we in our own world today see so many people seeking for and vying for on social media and in the news, all sorts of places, and in our own lives. We're all looking for ways to stand out and to be somebody. And there are healthy ways to do that through your personal accomplishments and the things that you are contributing to society. And then there are the negative ways of doing that, the things that you consume, the things that you hold on to so that nobody else can have. And this is very much a theme in Tolkien's work. And in chapter 22, Christopher Tolkien is bringing us back to the story of the Silmaril, because that's really what this whole thing is about in the First Age, is how, well, Morgoth himself being there in Middle-earth and affecting the lives of these individuals, but also the seeking of this power, these objects, the Silmarils. And so you have one that is now in the hands of Thingol. Thingol's been holding on to it. And now you have the Naglamir, the most beautiful object. I guess you could say that. The most beautiful object that the dwarves had ever created, and was created for, again, not one of Thingol's people, a Noldor. Finrod Felagund, one of the best of the Noldor who had ever existed. And here Thingol is with these two items, these two beautiful, priceless objects. And we have been told that his thoughts have been focusing more and more as time passes on the Jewel of Feanor. Feanor is Noldorin. He is not one of Thingol's people. Again, there's a reason why Tolkien uses certain words here. He could have said on the Silmaril. We know it's a Silmaril. He says the Jewel of Feanor, because he's noting that there's a distance here between the two of them. And so Thingol, with the Jewel of Feanor and the necklace of Finrod made by the dwarves, gets an idea. He realizes that he doesn't want to be away from the Jewel of Feanor ever. And so, what if he were to go to the dwarves and get their best craftsmen to find a way to add the Silmaril to the Naglamir? Make the most beautiful necklace ever created. He can wear it. He will never be somewhere where he cannot be with the gem itself, with the jewel, the Silmaril itself. And we're told here at the beginning of the story that we're given a little bit of a history, but we remember that in Menegroth it was carved out by the dwarves, and that the dwarves were continuing to pass between this realm of Doriath and their homes in the Blue Mountains. And we're given some very specific details here about the locations and the pathways between these two places. What's most notable, and we don't have to go over all the different names, like Sam Athred, the Ford of Stones, and these places that they travel, but what's most notable now is that the world is so dangerous that these dwarves are not moving back and forth in small parties anymore. They're coming in large groups in order to protect the safety of the party while they travel. And among those large groups are some of the best craftsmen the dwarves have ever had. And so Thingol goes to the dwarves and says, "Hey, I've got this idea. I would like you to set the Silmaril in the Naglamir. By the way, this is something that your people have made and was gifted to somebody who isn't me. And so just ignore all of that and just do the thing that I'm going to pay you to do. Cool? All right, cool." I have a feeling that's probably how the conversation went. Guess what? This doesn't go so well. Can you guess what happens next? Then the dwarves looked upon the work of their fathers, and they beheld with wonder the shining jewel of Feanor, and they were filled with a great lust to possess them, and carry them off to their far homes in the mountains. But they dissembled their mind and consented to the task. This is one of the passages that comes directly after the situation that I just explained. Now, there is a word in here that is probably not too familiar to many of us, and my first thought was to interpret this word incorrectly, so I have to assume that most of us would. They dissembled their mind and consented to the task. We don't use the word dissembled. We use disassembled, right, to take apart. But dissembled means something different. It means to hide away, to ignore for a time, but not to actually get rid of. So this idea of possessing the shining jewel of Feanor and the Noglemir for themselves was an idea that they hid away from themselves for a short period of time, only to come back to after the task was done. The next paragraph says, "Long was their labor, and Thingol went down alone to their deep smithies and sat ever among them as they worked. In time, his desire was achieved, and the greatest of the works of elves and dwarves were brought together and made one, and its beauty was very great. For now the countless jewels of the Noglemir did reflect and cast abroad in marvelous hues the light of the Silmaril amidmost." Now, if you can picture this, the Silmarils, remember, the Silmarils are filled with the light of the trees of Valinor. They are constantly shining. They are not just like diamonds that are very good at reflecting light. They cast light themselves. They are glowing. Now set amongst many, many other gems on this necklace. The light, it's like fastening a, I don't know, I mean, I guess you could do this in the real world today with little lights and with little tiny batteries, little LED lights. But this would be much more beautiful than just a little LED light. And it shines into the gems and then fractures the light. You would have to imagine that to look at this directly would be very bright with all the reflecting going on with these other gems, but also the refracting of light. This thing probably cast rainbows, or at least that's my headcanon. It doesn't say that anywhere here, but I would imagine that this thing is colorful and beautiful in a way that no other gem or combination of gems had ever been before. And although it doesn't specifically say rainbow, it does give us a hint that that might be similar, or a good description, a similar description, because in the passage I just read, it notes, "cast abroad in marvelous hues the light of the Silmaril." So there is definitely some coloring going on. Hues would mean colors. Colors are being cast about. And so in my mind, I'm seeing the way that gems refract into rainbows and those kinds of things. But it doesn't specifically say rainbows here. So it's one of those like tricky things. Yes, there's colors, but are they rainbows? We don't really know. But then it goes on, it says, "Then Thingol, being alone among them, made to take it up and clasp it about his neck. But the dwarves in that moment withheld it from him and demanded that he yield it up to them, saying, 'By what right does the Elven King lay claim to the Noglemir that was made by our fathers for Finrod Felagund, who is dead? It has come to him, but by the hand of Húrin, the man of Dor Lomond, who took it as a thief out of the darkness of Nargothrond.' But Thingol perceived their hearts and saw well that desiring the Silmaril, they sought but a pretext and fair cloak for their true intent." Simply put, he could tell that this was an excuse to get their hands on the Silmaril, and that was the thing that was truly tempting them. And now that these two things were combined, this was an easy excuse in order to do that. "And in his wrath and pride, he gave no heed to his peril, but spoke to them in scorn, saying, 'How do ye of uncouth race dare to demand aught of me, Elu Thingol, lord of Beleriand, whose life began by the waters of Cuvienn in years uncounted ere the fathers of the stunted people awoke?'" Whoa, so did you catch what just happened? Thingol, who has been way more reasonable lately. We've seen him go from somebody who was very self-centered and very focused on what he wanted and had no tolerance for humankind or dwarves or whoever else, to being way more fair-minded. But in this moment, as they are attempting to take away his Silmaril, he believes it is his now, he gets really mean. He goes all racist on them. Uncouth race. Stunted people. These would have been fighting words for the dwarves. And oh, by the way, he is by himself down here in the areas where they are working, far away from the rest of his court. "And standing tall and proud among them, he bade them with shameful words be gone unrequited out of Doriath. Then the lust of the dwarves was kindled to rage by the words of the king, and they rose up about him and laid hands on him and slew him as he stood. So died in the deep places of Menegroth Elwë Singollo, king of Doriath, remember his original name, who alone of the children of Ilúvatar was joined with one of the Ainur. That's a reference to Melian. He, Thingol and Melian together are the only couple that's Elf and Maiar. And he who, alone of the Forsaken Elves, had seen the light of the trees of Valinor, with his last sight gazed upon the Silmaril. And call it greed, call it the doom of Mandos on the Silmarils, or just combinations of all of those things, he is killed. And the dwarves decide that it is time to leave. Then the dwarves, taking the Noglimir, passed out of Menegroth and fled eastwards through Region. But tidings went swiftly through the forest, and few of that company came over Aros, for they were pursued to the death as they sought the eastward road. And the Noglimir was retaken and brought back in bitter grief to Melian the queen. Yet two there were of the slayers of Thingol who escaped from the pursuit of the eastern marches and returned at last to their city far off in the Blue Mountains. And this part is particularly interesting. And there in Nagrod they told somewhat of all that had befallen, saying that the dwarves were slain in Doriath by command of the elven king, who thus would cheat them of their reward. Notice the way the description here is twisted. They did not take and accept the blame for what was done on their side. Now, obviously, Thingol was acting like a big jerk in response, but he wasn't the one that tried to take the thing from the other group first. But from the perspective of the dwarves, Thingol never had the right to the Noglimir to begin with. So you can see both sides of the argument, but you can also see that as the story grows and changes, that the explanation of these two dwarves to the rest of their people about why so many of them were murdered leaves out some key details. How realistic is this? How much of the time is this the way things play out, where people will tell half-truths and hide away the darker parts, and then other people act on it because they believe them and trust them? So the dwarves respond. It says here, then great was the wrath and lamentation of the dwarves of Nagrod for the death of their kin and their great craftsmen. And they tore their beards and wailed. This is like a biblical passage. There are many times in the Bible where it explains somebody who is going through grief as tearing their clothes, wearing sackcloth, putting ash on their head, these kinds of things. And this may be one of those references that draws a connection between the dwarves and the Jews. And we know that the types of people that the Jewish people represented in Tolkien's mind were the kinds of people who had been ousted from their homes, that were considered outsiders, these kinds of things, and that the dwarves were influenced by a lot of that. So this may be a direct kind of a biblical reference. I mean, it doesn't point to a specific part of the Bible, but the way that the words in the Bible would have been used and the way that these kinds of people would have lamented bad times or sorrow, those kinds of things. It goes on and says, and long they sat, taking thought for vengeance. And we're even given here an explanation that shows that not all of these dwarves were of the same mind and equally responsible. I guess that's the way to say. Because the dwarves from Nagrod reach out to the dwarves of Belagost. And these are the two dwarven kingdoms that are in the mountains over on the Blue Mountains. They're very close to each other. And the dwarves from Nagrod are ready to go to war. They've been sitting here thinking about vengeance. But the dwarves from Belagost attempt to dissuade the other dwarves from Nagrod. So it goes to show that although some of these dwarves may be doing things that you could consider evil and selfish, other groups of dwarves decided that that was a bad idea. They are not all of the same mind, and they are not all responsible for the events that just happened. And without support from the dwarves of Belagost, the dwarves of Nagrod decide to march out upon Doriath. But before we get to that, we need to talk about Melian. How does Melian respond to the death of her husband. And we'll get there right after the break.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, here we are in the middle of the show, and we have a bunch of new patrons to welcome on board here. Let's go through the list. Muddy R and Rachel T and Josh B and Katie S and Melody. That's a cool name. And continuing up this list, we have, Sauron. I'm mispronouncing the name. Sauron the Black, Stacy J, Taylor W, David S, Christopher, Ginger, A&M Playhouse, and Muhammad P. Welcome to the Patreon, everybody. Welcome aboard. There's plenty of room for everybody. Pull up a comfy couch, chair, seat, something, and kick your legs up, you know? So welcome aboard, everyone. Also, we have to shout out our highest level patrons, our VIP patrons, Bo, Brad S, Brandy D, Chewbacca, David M, Drupal, Esoteric Rage, Jesse P, Katie S, Larry, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Patrick W, Sam B, Shannon L, Tyler M, Wes P. Thank you so much to all of you and all 181 of our current patrons. Thank you so much for your support. And you are all champions. That is correct. You are all champions. Also, we have some new reviews to read out here. Let's jump through these. Three new ones. This one's from Legal Smeagol, I love it, from New Zealand. True education is a kind of never-ending story. Oh, weary traveler of Arda, I bid thee listen to my words of great import, for I have come across a most rapturous sermon that delves deep into the lore of her beloved professor. This oral treat is a feast for the mind, an intellectual banquet that will satiate even the most voracious of halflings. So witty is our host that Hobbiton folk would shake their heads in exasperation, bemoaning him as one of them, those queer folk that from across the Brandywine, and his discussions are as insightful as the wisdom of Manway himself. The depth of his knowledge is as vast as the clefts and chasms of Khazad Dûm, and his passion for the world of Tolkien shines through as brightly as the leaves of Telperion and Lorelin upon the fields of Valinor. Oh, I implore thee, do not hesitate to partake in this joyous experience, for it is truly a treasure of Middle-earth to rival the most jealously guarded of dragon hordes. Eru smiled, and for a great deal, it seemed good to him, for in the music, there were no flaws. That is amazing, Legal Smeagol. Thank you so much, and I will try to live up to these titles. Holy moly. All right, we've got another one from Kaban in the United States. He writes, just wow. This podcast was suggested to me via the Spotify algorithm, and intrigued, I decided to give it a try. Up until this point, all of my podcasts were typically rewatch style with a few stories thrown in. So this was both up my alley and also totally different. With just one episode, I was hooked. I have been a Tolkien fan ever since my mother introduced me to The Hobbit in middle school, and I have since read it to my younger brother growing up, and I'm currently reading it to my six-year-old daughter. That is amazing, because I read it to both of my kids when they were roughly that age. I am simply in awe at the care and detail Tom/Robots. I am lovingly dubbing him TomBots from here on, puts into this show. This makes the Silmarillion digestible and has answered so many questions I've had about the lore, and then some. Tom is also the type of person that, though we've never met, I want to be friends and sit down and talk about all things nerd, because he is just so authentic, genuine, and awesome. Check out this podcast now. Oh, thank you so much, Kabo. And yeah, I mean, hey, I chime in on stuff on the Discord channel and those kinds of things, so I'm definitely around for that. And stream on occasion, so you're welcome to jump in for those as well. This final one is from AK Music Lover in the United States, and they write, so much fun. 44 years ago, I was on restriction for a month in the summer, got in big trouble. I read Tolkien's books, The Silmarillion and The Lord of the Rings, at least three times. This podcast is just fun. I'm glad I found it, and I'm more than happy to support it. Oh, thank you so much. To all of you, thank you for your support. Also, if you're listening on Spotify, there are questions there now on episodes that, at least the newest episodes, that say things like, how is this episode? And you're welcome to respond to those. I can't read all of those out on every episode, or episodes would take forever. So, but I will see them, and other people will see them as well. So thank you for your support there. Also, I didn't mention patreon.com/LOTR Lorecast is the site if you want to go check that out. I'm considering things to add. I'm still working on stuff. I want to add more to the third tier in order to kind of buff that up a little bit. I'm thinking maybe t-shirts or something. So be looking out for that possibly in the future. And last thing, next week I will be going to the Elder Scrolls Online event in Las Vegas. And it's like a 2-day thing, but with travel, it's going to be 4 days for me. It's going to be a long week, so we're going to kind of take a little bit of a vacation around that as well. So I will probably not have an episode next week. I think I'm going to take the week off, which is like only the first or second time in the last year that I've actually missed a regular episode. So figured it's time for a little break, and I hope you guys can get along without a new episode that week, but I will be back the week after that. So, all right, let's move on with the rest of the story. So imagine being somebody like Melian now in this situation. She was always the more grounded one. She's wise. She is a Maiar. And her husband goes and does something like this. And he is now gone. This was the one reason that she was staying in Middle Earth, was that relationship. That was it. And everybody in Doriath is hit. It's not just Melian. It is everybody. Their king, their beloved leader is gone. And it says here that Melian sat long in silence beside Thingol the king, and her thought passed back into the starlit years, into their first meeting among the nightingales of Nan Elmoth in ages past. Years and years ago, she's thinking about the time that they met when they were young, and the world was young, and their love was young. How many times have you thought back to that first love, that first relationship, and how magical it all felt, even if it was terrible and fell apart later? This is what she's doing. This is a very real kind of human thing. And we're reminded here in this section that she is powerful. She is a Maia of great power and wisdom. And it was only this love for Elway, his original name, and that is used here in this passage, that she took upon herself the form of the elder children of Iluvatar, of an elf, so that they could be together. And now that he's no longer there, she doesn't need to stay there either. And we're reminded of a few other things, though. It says, in that form, being of the elder children of Iluvatar, she bore to him Luthien Tenuvial. We're reminded here of Luthien. And remember, Luthien died and then was brought back to Middle Earth. Beren and Luthien are off living, not in Doriath. They are there, back in the world, keeping to themselves. So this is a reminder of that. And in that form, she gained a power over the substance of Arda, and by the girdle of Melian was Doriath defended through long ages from the evils without. But now Thingol lay dead, and his spirit had passed to the halls of Mandos, and with his death, a change came also upon Melian. Thus it came to pass that her power was withdrawn in that time from the forests of Neldorath and Regian, and as Galduin, the Enchanted River, spoke with a different voice, and Doriath lay open to its enemies. It's in this moment that the girdle of Melian fails. She realizes that her time here is done. that for her there's nothing left, and it's time to go. And she does so almost in secret. Therefore, Melian spoke to none save to Mablung, remember Mablung, only, bidding him take heed to the Silmaril and to send word speedily to Baron and Luthien in Osiriand. And she vanished out of Middle-earth and passed to the land of the Valar beyond the Western Sea to muse upon her sorrows in the gardens of Lorien, whence she came. And this tale speaks of her no more. And that's it. This is the end of Thingol and Melian's story. But it is not the end of their line. Remember, Luthien is their daughter, and Luthien is alive again and well with Baron. And they also have family and other people around them. The line of Thingol and Melian is not finished. And we've talked about this before in some of the lineage episodes and those kinds of things. There is more to be done here. And one of the things I want to leave you with is a question. If you are Luthien or Baron, and you get the news that Thingol is dead, that the dwarves murdered him, tried to steal the Silmaril, and Melian is now left Middle-earth, and Doriath sits unprotected, what do you do? Do you rush home to try to defend the homeland from any evil that would now dare to encroach the forest? Do you go back seeking the Silmaril in order to try to keep it safe? Do you seek revenge against the dwarves for what they did? Or are there other options? The other thing I'll ask is what happens when the news gets out to the rest of the Noldor that Doriath is no longer protected? Seems like a perfect opportunity to go claim that Silmaril, because you made a vow hundreds of years ago to not let anyone else take it, save the children of Feanor. So I'll leave you with that. What happens next?
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.